Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello. You're listening to BFM. This is a podcast about IVF, infertility, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby, and we are both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
I'm always talking to you.
Well, I hope you're all well too.
Yeah, everyone across the world.
Indeed.
All peoples.
All the peoples.
This week we are talking to Genevieve Roberts.
We are.
Who is like a bit of a celebrity.
She is.
She has been. You know, so I was trying to organise the interview with her and I was emailing her and I was at work and we always have Sky on at work.
Mm.
And I looked up, and there she was.
Really?
On Sky. Yeah, talking about solo motherhood.
Yes, she's got a book, hasn't she?
She has got a book called Going Solo, My Choice to Become a Single Mother Using a Donor.
Yeah. And she's been, like, it's had extracts in some of the Sunday magazines, hasn't it?
Yeah.
That's where I read it anyway. I think she was in the Sunday Times one week.
She was.
A couple of months ago, probably.
Yeah, she's done a good job.
She has done a great job.
And we had a lovely chat, really nice chat, and I think, so she's got two kids,
mm-hmm.
both via donors.
Yeah.
One through IUI, one through IVF.
Yes.
That's right. And she was feeding her new son while we were talking.
Which made both of us quite nervous.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, this baby's going to start making loads of noise.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was completely silent.
Not a peep.
No.
I was really impressed.
What's his name? Xavier.
Xavier.
Oh, good little Xavi.
Yeah, Astrid and Xavi.
Oh, great names.
Great names. So that's a fun one.
It was a fun one. She's really, really nice.
Yeah.
And obviously, we know lots of people that are doing this, going on their own, uh-huh. and just... and it's amazing. And, I, you know, my hat comes off to all of them. I think it's...
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not easy.
Yeah. And then talking to Professor Tim.
Yes.
About abnormal shaped uteruses.
We are.
Although, I don't... I mean, everybody has like a slightly...
Oh, yeah, I don't think we've got cookie cutter uteruses,
no.
have we?
But these ones are like clinically abnormally shaped. So things like... we've used this kind of terminology on the podcast before, like a bicornuate uterus, a septuate uterus.
Yeah, heart-shaped.
Heart-shaped. So, and you know, do those things impact your chances of conception?
Yes. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And that's kind of it for this week. This is our third last podcast.
It is, yeah.
We've got, two more to come after this,
yep.
right? Yeah, so not final forever, just final for now.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
We've had quite a few people write in actually and kind of tell us how sad they are that we're taking a break.
Which is nice.
It is nice. And, you know, just to reiterate, we're very sad too.
Yeah.
But needs must. And we will endeavour to be back as soon as we can.
Absolutely. No one's happy that we're taking a break.
No.
Not yet.
No.
No one's told us that anyway.
No. Maybe they've just kept that to themselves. Yeah. They're like, yes, finally. They're going to shut up.
Please continue to keep that to yourself. but in the meantime, you can email us.
bigfatnegativepodcast@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Instagram
@bigfatnegative.
You can follow us on Twitter
@bigfatnegative.
You can follow us on Facebook,
Big Fat Negative.
And you can like and subscribe and rate and review.
Oh, you could if you were feeling particularly generous.
If you were, that would be really
yeah.
nice.
Yeah.
And that's it. So,
and also just to say, we're not going to leave Instagram world.
Oh, no, we're going to stay there.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing that.
We might be quieter on the pod world.
And louder on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But don't worry, no babies are going to get shoved in anyone's face.
No.
Just FYI.
Yeah.
Okay, enjoy listening to the podcast.
Have a good week.
Yeah. Genevieve, it's such a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me.
So we always start the podcast by asking people about their journey.
Yeah.
So tell us about yours.
So I was in my mid to late 30s, a kind person would say mid, maybe, I think I was around 37, and
that's definitely
I
mid.
Wanted to find out my fertility levels. I'd had a miscarriage a couple of years prior to that, with a previous boyfriend who'd left very soon afterwards.
Sorry,
had been a bit of a whirlwind and had thrown me completely. And a couple of years had passed and I'd come to terms with that relationship breaking down. It was all, I mean, it wasn't, we weren't trying to have children, we weren't at that stage, but I had happened to become pregnant. So
yeah,
I'd come to terms with that and moved on, but I really wanted to become, I think it switched something on in me being pregnant. I really wanted to become a mother. I'd always taken for granted that I would be a mother, and that sense of certainty about it had grown into a kind of sense of longing in my 30s, and then it had become more acute after that miscarriage. So I decided to get my fertility tested, and I expected it to be high because I'd been able to accidentally become pregnant before. So I thought, if I'm able to get pregnant that easily, it's likely to be sky high. And I was actually told it was really, really low.
Really?
I think my AMH level was 2 point something. I mean, it was super low.
Yeah.
So my ovarian reserve was really down. And I was told that if having children was a really important thing to me, to think about what I wanted to do, because if I didn't do something swiftly, it could mean that I wouldn't be able to have children. And so I found my kind of world turned upside down a little bit, because I'd always presumed partner then children. But I thought about it and it just seemed to me so heartbreaking not to even try to have children. And I told myself that I could get my head around the idea of trying to have children and not managing to, but the idea of not even trying just felt really hard to come to terms with. And so I thought it's okay not to follow a conventional route, and that for me there's no time limit on meeting a partner, but there really is for me a time limit on having children. And so I decided to set about that. And I was really aware that it might not happen. Even in one of the first appointments, they said to me, if IUI doesn't work, if artificial insemination doesn't work, they'd try IVF. And if IVF didn't work, was I aware that there was a double donor route? Because I was single, so I was using a donor. So it was very, they were kind of quite clear that there's hope for me if it doesn't happen immediately. It was clear that just with my levels being so low that I had to act. It might have been 3.6, I can't remember, but it was that kind of, when I looked at it, it was lower than the low fertility line. So then it became kind of quite clear and quite simple, because it was so heartbreaking, the idea of not trying, that I then became quite focused on trying to become pregnant if I could.
I guess it took the choice away.
Well, I think I think that's it. I think I expected the results of that fertility test to be so high that I would then kind of be reassured and would hopefully meet a partner sometime down the line and then have children with them. And those results were so different that it made me really think about what was important in my life and what I kept imagining myself as an old person, and looking back on my life. And I thought that trying not trying to have children could be really the only regret that I was likely to have in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like I would be okay if it just wasn't meant to, you know, if there was no way of having children, or if it was going to be proved to be exceptionally hard, then I could kind of make peace with that. It was the idea of not even knowing that felt like it would always feel like something that why didn't I explore it?
And yeah.
There's been quite a few women since who have said to me, women maybe 10 years older than me, who said they wish they'd had the bravery to do it, which I think is a really honest thing to come out with.
So you did an IUI?
Yes. So I've now got two children.
Uh-huh.
And with my first, I was exceptionally lucky. I had two rounds of IUI. I remember the first one. I mean, compared to IVF, it's so non-intrusive. And, you know, they were just monitoring my cycle and waiting till I got to the point of ovulation. It was non-medicalized IUI as well. So the only thing I was going to take was the trigger injection.
Mm, yeah.
And I remember them giving me this trigger injection to take and me being like, what? Do I really need to take this? And thinking that was such a big deal. And, you know, 2 years later, trying to get pregnant with my son, and I'm injecting stuff all the time. And I couldn't get pregnant with IUI the second time round. I tried five times.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried it non-medicalized and medicalized. I guess, you know, I was 2 years older. I was... Mm-hmm. 39 when I was trying to get pregnant with him, and so I did have IVF in order to conceive him, and I was so lucky I managed to conceive him on the first round of IVF.
How was it going through, because obviously IUI and IVF are quite different, but what was it like going through, what was the difference between those two experiences for you, as you know, on your own basically?
I think IUI is you're still, I mean, whatever you have, you're so invested in it, because all of a sudden you're watching your cycle so closely, and it's not like, I suppose, if you have a partner and you're just trying to get pregnant naturally, I imagine you're just having sex a lot at the right time. You know, a lot of friends have peed on ovulation sticks to make sure they hit that right time.
Mm.
And instead you've got a doctor checking when you're getting there. I felt good doing it on my own. I felt like it was giving me hope, and I was following something that was so important to me to try. So it didn't really concern me doing it on my own. I remember with that trigger injection, going to the pharmacy and saying, I don't really know what to do with this, and they very kindly she said, I'm not supposed to do this for you, but come on, let's work it out, and took me round behind the curtain and did it for me.
That's
so kind. I know, it's so kind, because, you know, if you've never injected anything before, and I think that's the thing with fertility clinics, they're so used to kind of giving out injections to people. I think they forget what a big deal it is the first time you're given one, and that actually this isn't an everyday thing. And I'd never stuck anything in my stomach deliberately before. So, and I was worried about air bubbles, or was it the right place, and what would the effect be, and all those sorts of things. But I found IUI really quite a nice process. I loved it. I was at the Lister Clinic. I wouldn't have qualified for NHS unless I could have told them that I'd done many rounds of IUI that hadn't worked. Because of being on my own, I couldn't show that I'd been trying to get pregnant for a long time without doing IUI. So it's not supported in the same way by the NHS.
Mm-hmm.
But it was lovely if I saw the same nurse again, and I felt like I was starting to build up relationships with them.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as hard as all that doing it on my own, really.
Good.
What about the people around you? Did you feel supported by your family and your friends?
You know what? I felt like I had such an army of support. I felt so, so lucky. It's amazing how wonderful people are when you tell them that you're doing something that's maybe a little bit unconventional, but it's really following your heart. And I feel so fortunate to have people around who just offered me as much support, and that came in every form: emotional support, people helping to move me. I moved out of London recently, mm-hmm. and people helping to do that because they knew I wouldn't be able to with a small child. A couple of friends emptied their lofts because they've got older children and they wanted to show their support, and they knew they couldn't be around too much, so they passed on so much baby stuff. Astrid has had the most fantastic wardrobe. We've got a friend who's still, you know, I saw her the other week and she came down with a laundry bag of stuff, of clothes for Astrid. We're so lucky. People show their support in so many ways. And I feel like I can talk to my family and my friends about things when they worry me, or when I'm not sure, or when I want a bit of advice. And that's so invaluable. So yeah, it was amazing how much support there was out there. I think people had always known how much I wanted to be a mum.
Mm-hmm.
And I think perhaps if I'd said I was going to do that in my 20s, it would have had a very different reaction. I'm not sure my boyfriend at the time would have been very impressed either. I think people knew that it was a really important thing to me. My mum did say to me, "Did I realise that she would love me just as much even if I didn't have children?"
That made tears come to my eyes a little bit.
Yeah, that felt like a really special thing to say. My mum's so family orientated. She had children in her 20s, and I think her children are very much the centre of her life. And I think growing up in that, it's very hard to almost perhaps see outside of that. And so I think that's part of why I'd taken it so for granted that I would have children, and that's just such, you know, that's a given. And her saying that did make me cry at the time, because it just felt it's something. I think my mum wanted to make sure that I wasn't putting this pressure on myself because of the influence of society, because it's such a kind of expected thing for women to do in their 30s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a huge amount of pressure from society, and I think if you're single, you don't feel that in quite the same way. The pressure tends to be get a partner and then have children.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm sure I did feel some sort of self-inflicted pressure to do it. She just wanted to make sure it was really what I wanted to do. I think I'm very lucky because I've got two nephews as well. So I'd spent a lot of time with them when they were young, and seen the good, the bad and the ugly of having children. And that, you know, it's not all kisses and fun and skipping along roads.
Don't say that, Genevieve. I heard that's what it is. I'm 33 weeks.
I mean, 99% of it is kisses and skipping along the road.
Great.
Just that tiny sliver where maybe in the middle of the night, just like a tiny bit more sleep. But yeah, I was going into it with my eyes wide open. And I think that's the same with anyone who goes through any fertility treatment, or even probably considers fertility treatment. It's something that's really well thought out. And certainly for my book, I was I spoke to a sociologist about it, and she said that all children conceived from fertility treatment tend to have that same thing in common, that they're very wanted and they're very loved, and so they have very good parents because
yeah.
this is something that you've put your heart into.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think once my mum realised how much it meant to me, she was then very, very supportive. I think she just wanted to check and make sure I knew that I wasn't a failure in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I found quite interesting that you talk about in the book is the kind of, you were kind of concerned about not being able to provide a father figure for your kids.
Yes.
And how did you kind of, you know, I guess reconcile yourself with that? And are there kind of steps that you've taken to ensure that that's not the case?
Well, I mean, my children have godparents, and I think that's really important. I think it's really important that they have not only kind of male role models, but also adults who they can turn to who aren't me. So when they're teenagers and they think I'm being unreasonable, there's another adult who they can talk to about how needlessly strict I'm being, or whatever it is they think I'm doing that's you know that makes them unhappy. I'm lucky that my brothers, I'm close to my brother, and so I think he's a, you know, a strong male figure. But also I think that thing of kind of creating your family is a really lovely one, and picking those people who will be in my children's life forever, which is just absolutely wonderful. So yeah, I thought very carefully, and there's some really important people. I'm also really lucky that a lot of my friends do have partners, and I've got to know them. Female friends have partners. So there's lots of men around, and I think that's so important.
Why is it important? Like, is it that important?
I think so. I think it's really good for them to see. Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't think that there's anything that women can't do. Don't get me wrong. Someone challenged me once and went, but who's going to play football with your children? It was
like, well, I bloody am.
Yeah, it was like, I think I can have a kick around.
Also, like, I can't remember ever playing football as a kid.
But yeah, so I have been challenged on that, and it's not in that way. I think just for the richness of life, I think it's really mm-hmm. good to know women and to know men. I think also so that you don't grow up with a kind of an odd perspective and feel like you're just surrounded, you know, that men are somehow either, if you're not feeling kind of familiar with them almost and comfortable. Mm. I think if you were never surrounded by men, I wonder whether you would feel as naturally comfortable with them as you do with women. I think they'd feel, you know, just these slightly hairier creatures might feel strange to you.
They are hairy.
Yeah, so I do think it's really important. Not because women can't do anything or there's anything inherently, you know, different, but I think it's really good to have that balance. I feel lucky that my children do. I also feel with my son, there might be questions that he'd rather ask a man than me about puberty or about women, you know. I don't know, and I think it's good that he has those channels open to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I guess this is probably kind of, you know, in a similar vein, talking about kind of friends and family, the support you get. But I'm curious to know what the practicalities of birth are when you're kind of doing it on your own.
Did you have a birth partner?
I did. My sister-in-law was with me both times.
Aww.
So I was.
What's
really
her name?
Lucky. Jess.
Good old Jess.
Yeah, so she was absolutely wonderful. She's far more, far less scared of hospitals than I am, and far more confident about the whole thing, and kind of no nonsense about things like that. Whereas I get into my head and find it actually quite terrifying. So it was really wonderful to have her around. She, I had hoped very much for a bit of a water birth the first time. I'd done some hypnobirthing. She'd even come with me to a birthing, kind of active birthing session where we both, I've known her since I was at school. She met my brother when we were all at school. So aww. We did kind of revert to being teenagers and just giggling away the minute they said, hold your partner's bump. And there were all these kind of loving couples there who were kind of stroking bumps. And we were sitting there.
Oh, my God.
I mean, we're good friends, but she hadn't stroked my bump at any point, you know. We don't have that kind of friendship. So, yeah, the whole thing was really funny. But it ended up in a C-section, and she was okay. Great for that. Both of her children ended up as C-section deliveries as well. So she was really kind of, oh, this is fine, you know, as I suddenly was like, oh, this is major surgery. So it was yeah. It was really good to have her around. I think I probably squeezed her hand very tightly to the point that I don't know whether she's even regained feeling now, but you know, that's what she was there for. She cut the cord both times with aww. My daughter. She didn't, there was no noise immediately. You listen for the crying, don't you? And that wasn't there immediately. And they rushed her off to the corner, and Jess, I kept saying to Jess, where is she? Because I wanted my skin to skin. And and she kept telling me it was absolutely fine. I could see lots of paediatricians and people rushing into the room. But it felt like a lifetime. It was probably about 2 minutes that they actually brought her over. And she just had, she just needed oxygen wafted under her. She didn't need resuscitating. Okay. Whereas my son cried immediately as he was coming out, which was wonderful. He also had a few problems with breathing. I think the whole thing of not going through a vaginal delivery makes it a bit harder for the babies at the start. But they just watched him for a little while, so they kept giving him to me for skin to skin, and then just checking his oxygen levels, and then bringing him back to me, which was absolutely fine.
Hey, we haven't talked about sperm donors at all. How did you choose yours, and did you use the same one for both your kids?
I did. So genetically, they're full brother and sister, which actually was really important to me. I think they'll be brought up. I already talked to Astrid about how a man did something very kind to give some an ingredient that means that I could become a mummy, and how wanted she was. When they're 18, they have the chance to get in touch, and I think it's really great that they're going to have the same response from someone. Yeah. I think it could be really tricky. Obviously, no donors are anonymous these days, but I think it would be really tricky if, for example, one donor was wanted a, you know, not that they're going to want a dad relationship with someone, because I don't think they will, but if one person was kind of quite present and wanted to meet up for a coffee and the other one just sent a postcard, you know, I wouldn't want one of them to feel shortchanged. So
yeah, that would be difficult.
So I think it's great that they have the same thing and that they can talk to each other about it, because I'm sure that there'll be lots of emotions surrounding that. And I obviously want to support them in everything, but sometimes you just want to talk to someone who is having the same experience as you, and I think that's great.
Absolutely.
So yeah, the clinic suggested to me a sperm bank, and I went with that. It's a US sperm bank, and so you get a lot of details about the donor. I was under the impression at the time that it was 10 families worldwide because of the HFEA ruling, but I find out now that actually it's 10 families in the UK, and that's something that I
10 families what?
As in a donor can donate to 10 families. They can donate their sperm. Wow. So there's the UK puts a very sensible limit on it.
So you don't have loads of kids that look the same wandering around,
or inbreeding.
Exactly. I think that's the reason why. Well, I think and also a genetic thing, just if they happen to if there's something that you don't know about that's recessive in you,
you could end up
with a lot of children. So there are limits, but the limits aren't the same in the US, and I didn't know that, and I kind of feel like the world is a very small place.
Yeah.
And so there's billions of us, but still, I would feel more comfortable if it were 10 worldwide. Mm. I hope my children will think it's a very exciting thing that they have more
scrutinize everyone.
Yeah. I feel like the language when you have donor families hasn't quite caught up, because I'm not sure whether half sibling is actually the correct term. I mean, genetically it absolutely is.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In the counselling, you're told very much to refer to a donor rather than a dad, because you don't want to set up any idea of a role that's played.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same really with a half sibling. They may, you know, become friends, but that you can't take that for granted at all. It makes me actually really pleased that Astrid and Zavi have that they're full siblings growing up together. And by full sibling, I mean growing up, not the genetic link, but that kind of arguing together and, you know, who's got the bigger portion of ice cream and all that stuff that kind of goes on for years and years and is what makes a brother and a sister, that makes that relationship so unique. And I think it's quite good, because then I know lots of only children who have built up a kind of fantasy of what having a brother or a sister would be like. And it's magical having a brother or sister, but it's not necessarily exactly how an only child, I think, perceives it, because there's a lot more fighting along the way.
yeah, there's definitely a lot more like, oh, mom.
Yes, exactly. And I think once you can say that to someone, you can also, you respect them so much, and it's... they're relationships that weather every storm, and I think that's something really special.
I love the fact that when you were looking for a donor, that one guy who had written a letter to his future kids had sold out.
Yes.
It was such a lovely
letter that I imagine that every woman and every family looking at that, every couple were like, this is a good one. It's just like a few pearls of life advice in there, but written in a very non-judgmental way, but just about how he'd failed at something and then he tried again. It was really lovely. I think if you've got a winning letter, your sperm's probably more in demand.
Well, if there's any sperm donors listening, please give them some good advice.
Genevieve, you know, thank you again so much for coming on and telling your story. I guess our last question would be, can you kind of give some advice for women who find themselves in the same position as you?
I think no one should go into having children lightly. You know, it's going to change your entire world. But I think it's really important that women in their 30s who are single feel like they have choices. And I think that's the horrible thing sometimes. If you're so aware of the idea that your fertility probably is going down, to feel at all backed into a corner and that you don't have much choice and that you should start panic dating because you really want children, and that there are other options. And I think just by knowing that there are other options, you then make more sensible decisions, and in a way are probably more likely to meet someone if that's what you're hoping for. Also, it's the most wonderful thing that I've ever done, and that's what surprised me, is that every day it gives me so much delight and I feel so lucky. And so it's not the way that I would, you know, teenage me would have set out to have a family, but I wouldn't change it for the world now. I absolutely wouldn't. And yeah, I just think it's the most wonderful thing I've ever done, and I do feel grateful for it every day. So I guess in that way, definitely important to talk to all the people around you and check that that you're going to have some support. Even if you don't, I guess you then cross that bridge. But I think, yeah, just so good and so wonderful to be able to follow our dreams. And I think that's what I think is a really amazing thing about living in this time, where people do support other people, and that sometimes things might not look conventional or how you expect it on the outside, but that as long as you're in a position to provide your children with love and security, they're likely to thrive, and that they're the most important things in the world.
Oh, well,
a lovely note to end on.
That is a lovely note. Would you like to do a very quick plug for your book?
Oh, yes, please. it's called Going Solo, My Choice to Become a Single Mum Using a Single Mother Using a Sperm Donor. It's published by Piatkus. You can buy it on Amazon or at Waterstones or all good bookshops.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you to both your children for being remarkably silent.
Yeah, it's been amazing.
I could hear Astrid in the background at one point. So, yeah.
Well, I'm done, not Astrid sure and Savvy.
Fully silent. And Savvy's been busy feeding, which, yeah, that's his main focus. So
fair enough.
Well, thank you to both of them.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's our pleasure.
Cheers. Yeah.
Lovely to speak to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now it's time for
IVF.
What the F?
What the F?
It's a serious topic this week.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about abnormal shaped uteruses.
Yes, we are.
We've had a few people, like a few of our guests on the podcast mentioned that I keep in my head calling them funny shaped uteruses, but there's nothing funny about this.
No.
So we had, way back in the day, we had Hannah Vaughan Jones who talked about her.
Wasn't it heart-shaped
uterus? Heart-shaped, yeah. And then we've had a couple of other people. We had
Julia
last week, who had a unicorn.
Yes, I think so.
I think. And then there's also the septuate uterus. Mm. I hear these terms being thrown around all the time and I have no idea what they mean.
Yeah, and it's not just IVF, is it? It's fertility in general, yeah. And whether or not having a kind of differently shaped uterus is going to impact that or mm-hmm. not. And it's quite interesting.
It is interesting. So this is actually a really nice detailed answer from Professor Tim.
Oh, good old Professor Tim.
He really goes into the subject. He doesn't mention the unicorn uterus, which is kind of, the best thing is to ask Dr. Google, but it's kind of like a lopsided one.
Okay.
That doesn't quite have two fallopian tubes, so it's only really developed on one side.
Mm.
But he talks about all the other kinds.
Yes.
And it's very calming.
Good.
For those who might have been diagnosed with that. So have a listen. Yeah.
So when a woman has an abnormal shape uterus, that is often called a uterine anomaly. And there are many, many different types of shape of a uterus. And most people will be familiar with what a normal outline and a normal cavity of uterus will be, probably from your biology GCSE days. The question is, if you have an abnormal shaped uterus, does that affect implantation? So there are different grades of abnormality. A uterus which is just slightly abnormal sometimes is called an arcuate uterus, and it's sort of heart-shaped on outline. That's pretty common. Maybe 10 to 15% of women have an arcuate uterus. That does not interfere with implantation. Getting a bit more abnormal than that, the next stage is something called a septate uterus, which is where there's a piece of fibrous tissue or a septum which goes down the middle of the uterus, and that can be just in the top centimeter coming down the middle of the uterus, or it can even reach all the way down to the cervix and even push the cervix into two. If people have a septate or, you know, a septum in the uterus, it is thought that that may interfere with implantation, possibly because the lining of the womb over the septum hasn't got a good blood supply, and so embryos may find it difficult to implant there and to develop. So generally people feel that if there is a septum, that probably should be removed in women who have a history of fertility problems, although I have to say the evidence is not 100% clear on that. It is generally fairly easy to remove a septum like that. It's done as a day case operation with a telescope or hysteroscope that goes up through the cervix under general anaesthetic, and then scissors or an electrical cutting device are used to divide the septum from below all the way up to the top of the inside of the uterine cavity. And with that, you can have a normal shaped uterus inside. The next stage of abnormality would be a bicornuate uterus, which sometimes people call a double uterus. And for a bicornuate uterus, because the lining of the womb over all the surfaces inside the cavity are is actually got a good blood supply, it's fairly normal, then it is not linked to problems with conceiving. If women do have a bicornuate uterus though, because the size of the uterine cavity or cavities, as there might be two of them, is smaller, then that can be a problem if you're carrying a twin pregnancy. And also even with a singleton pregnancy, it is more likely that the baby might be in an abnormal position, such as a breech or bottom first position. From a fertility point of view though, there's no reason to have surgery for a bicornuate uterus. Surgery used to be done decades ago, but it's not necessary, and in fact probably more harm is done than good. So for most people, arcuate, no problem, bicornuate, no problem, and if it's a septate uterus, then that would be a discussion with a fertility specialist about the possibility of having surgery for that.
Thanks, Professor Tim.
Emma, how are you?
I'm fucking great.
Oh, look at that.
It's my first day of maternity leave today.
Wowzers.
It is a very strange feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we started trying for a baby in October 2015.
Yeah.
So that makes it almost 4 years that I've been thinking about what I'm going to do on maternity leave.
Oh, God.
Obviously, learn a new language, learn an instrument, write my novel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think a baby will come at some point during
this. Something like that.
Yeah. No, in all seriousness, like, it's a very weird feeling. It's like, just very surreal.
Yeah, I bet.
It hasn't sunk in at all. I mean, we're sitting here, it's Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast goes out tomorrow, so we're kind of up to date. We're drinking coffee and eating pastry.
It's delightful.
It's very civilised. But, yeah, and I slept. I had such a line this morning. I slept until 6 a.m.
Oh, my Lord.
I know.
What a treat.
Mental. We turned our lights out last night at 11 o'clock.
Oh my God, Emma. How did you manage?
Last night I was like, John, I'm not going to tell you when we should go to bed.
Oh my. John was like, oh.
John was like, freedom. Although he had to get up at 5:30, which is my normal waking up time.
So you did a swapsie.
We did a swapsie, but he's not as much of a kind of bedtime lights fascist as I am.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, just trying to feel chilled. Like, I know I can do it, but yeah. It's just...
What, be chilled?
Yeah, I remember being able to do that.
Well, look, you know, you've got a job that makes you get up early and you have to concentrate lots. It's quite stressful at times.
Yeah.
You know, you've been in that cycle for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah,
work so cycle.
Work cycle. Well, it's, yeah.
How long have you been working for?
I got my first job literally the August after I finished university. So I finished in June, did work experience for a month and a half, mm-hmm. and then got a job.
I mean, it's quite an intense job.
It is quite an intense job.
So it's going to take you a while to probably...
Wind down. Find a new routine.
I'm thinking like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. Don't you worry, mate. I've got one rule, and that rule is if I want to eat something sweet, I have to leave the house for it. So I can't just like go and buy a massive bar of chocolate and keep it in the house.
Oh, I see.
That's my rule. Because okay, that'll make good. Me leave the house.
Yes. Get exercise.
I'll just sit and watch TV.
I need chocolate in your pants.
Yeah. Maybe not even in pants.
Oh, wow.
It's comfiest that way.
Freedom.
Yeah. Anyway, so this weekend I went down to see my friend Sophie, my best friend.
Sophie, yeah. Who we've met before.
Yeah, who appeared in episode 4, right at the very, very beginning when we first started this podcast. Mm. Probably we recorded it about a year ago. She has twins now, yes. who are about 7 months old, and she's got a 3-year-old.
Yes.
And their house is full of noise. But it was really fun to see her because I just don't get to see her enough.
Yeah.
She gave me all the baby stuff. She basically gave me a baby starter kit.
Oh, wow.
Just everything from like a side cot to a Moses basket to like Nuff clothes. Basically, this baby is never going to wear the same thing twice.
Wow.
It's now got about 50 baby grows.
Amazing.
Yes.
You'll go through this. You'll fly through them.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking 3 or 4 a day.
Yeah.
But it was really nice to see her. Like, I really don't see her very often these yeah. days. Although we do talk a lot and she sends me presents every 4 weeks.
Of course she does.
Mm-hmm. but it just kind of reinforced in me that I feel... very guilty that I haven't been able to be there for her during the whole twins thing. Like, when she found out she was pregnant with twins, they were naturally conceived. And obviously, like, we're sitting there thinking, you bitch, you're so fucking fertile that you actually ovulated twice in 1 month.
Yeah.
And those eggs became humans. But in reality, it must have been incredibly daunting for her. And she never once complained. She never said anything.
Mm.
And I just feel so bad that I couldn't be there to support her at the time.
Mm.
That I just couldn't. And it's funny because I've been reading a book the last couple of days by somebody that we're off to interview.
Yes.
After this. Not going to give it away.
No.
And she talks a lot in her book about how infertility... And... I've been struggling to think of a word for this. She talks about how infertility is quite self-absorbing.
Yeah.
Like, you just end up thinking about yourself a lot. And it's not because you're a selfish person. It's just because the nature of the disease means that you are constantly analysing yourself. You're thinking about your own body. You're thinking about, am I relaxing enough? Mm. You know,
mm.
you're thinking about your behaviour. You do obsess about yourself.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, a few of my friends had kids during this time, and being a mum is hard. Like, we know being a mum is hard, not as hard as infertility, but I haven't been able to be there for them during these difficult times, these difficult transitions, shall we say.
But I think that's okay, mate. Like, you were going through something huge. They were going through something huge. You were going through something huge.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. You know, there were times when they weren't able to be there for you.
Yeah, I guess. But I think, like, Soph in particular has been just incredible all the way through my infertility. And the other night she was like... she'd had a couple of drinks. She's like, I want to feel this baby move. And I was like, I don't know how to make it move. It doesn't do it on command. And she was like, she basically put her hands on my bump and just started like making noises at it. And she started up very high and then very low. And the baby started kicking. And then she just started squealing at it. It was really funny. And I felt quite emotional.
Yeah, I bet.
And guilty that I don't talk to her enough. And she felt quite emotional. And I was just like, I wish I'd been able to be like that about the twins. Like, I got excited about the twins.
Mm.
But
you, like, it's understandable that you couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there's a degree to which I couldn't really get that excited about your pregnancy when it first happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's kind of self-preservation.
Yeah.
And it's necessary.
Yeah.
So I don't think you should feel bad. I think, you know, I think understanding both sides is important.
Yeah.
And for them to understand why you're behaving the way you're behaving, for you to kind of have some sort of empathy for perhaps that they're having a bad time as well.
Yeah. And there were times that I was better at that. And there were times that I was much worse at that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, absolutely.
But it's nice being able to get excited about my friend's pregnancies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can imagine.
It's such a nice relief.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I am able to empathise fully with them now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's my deep thought for the week.
Oh, lovely. Very profound.
Yeah, you all right?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'm really good, actually.
Cool.
Yeah. I had a really lovely weekend. That started on Friday, because I didn't start on Friday, I was working from home, but I had a little bit of work to do in the morning, and then it was free, because that's what freelance is. And it's delicious.
You bastard. Not that I can get jealous anymore.
Well, I'm in an office 3 days a week, so it's only the 2 days that I get to be that dickhead in the coffee shop. I psyched myself up for going for a run, it's one of those things that I've really wanted to go for a run pretty much all the way through this treatment, but always just talked myself out of it. Like, don't do it. It's not going to be good. You'll get your ovaries in a twist.
Too jiggly.
Yeah, yeah. The embryo won't implant you. You know, there's always a reason, like, maybe I shouldn't do it. So I haven't.
Yeah.
So I've been doing loads of reading, and, you know, everyone says running is fine. And when I say everyone, I mean like the blogs, all the blogs, and like lots of people I know have told me stories of people that have run all the way through.
I see really heavily pregnant women running much faster than me in Hyde Park.
I mean, yeah, it's doable. People do marathons.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
woman.
Not doing a marathon.
No, don't do that.
But then I told my mum, and my mum was like, I told my boss, and my boss was like, and I was
Me, and I was like, don't jiggle it.
Yeah, you were like, don't jiggle it round. I was like, so then, but then I was like, okay, look, I actually need to do this for myself, I think. So I went off, and I was running in quite a weird way because I was trying not to jiggle it. So I was like trying to be as smooth, and no, you know, no kind of up and down movement, just forward.
Yeah, like a dressage pony.
Yeah, I looked weird. It was good. I did... Like, I ran until I got a bit out of breath. Then I was like, I walk until I catch my breath back. Then I would run again, walk again, run again, walk again, all around the park. And yeah, it just felt really, really nice. And I am going to do it.
Mate, you should.
Every week I'm going to try.
I realised I was trying to discourage you because I just feel bad that I haven't done any exercise during this. I was trying to like make you join my shit club.
But you, to be fair, like you... No offence, weren't a huge exerciser before.
No. The only reason I ever started doing exercise was because I was infertile, and it, apparently it's good for hormones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, whereas I was a bit of a runner before.
Yeah, you've always been a runner.
Wanted to just, you know, it's not like I'm like, I need to feel myself. I know that it's good for my mental health to go for a run. So I was like, I think this is important that I at least try. And I did. And it was good.
I'm so glad.
Thank you, mate. And then on Saturday, it was my birthday.
It was
my birthday. I had lots of nice things planned. First of which was pregnancy yoga, which was quite an interesting experience. I kind of knew this was going to happen, but I'd hoped that maybe it wouldn't. I arrived in this kind of circle of pregnant ladies.
And giant bumps.
They all had huge bumps, yeah.
Ah, great.
Apart from one girl that was sitting next to me, thankfully, who was a week ahead of me.
Oh, cool.
And I felt like everyone was staring at me like, what are you doing here?
Imposter.
Yeah, where's your bump? Like, you don't deserve to be in this class. Obviously, no one actually said anything remotely like that.
Of course.
And they started by going around the circle and everyone had to say how many weeks they were and like share something about their pregnancy. And it was quite funny. Like, there was one woman, I'm 17 weeks. There was one woman that was 18 sitting next to me. And there was another woman that was 18 weeks and she had a huge bump. Like, was enormous.
Did she have twins?
No, but it's her second baby.
Ah.
And I was like, fucking hell, how can we be at the same point? Yeah. Like, she was like, she looked like she could have been, if I took a guess, I'd have said 7 months.
Really?
Yeah.
It's those rock hard abs of yours.
It's not. There's no such thing.
But it's also the fact that you're tall.
I am tall. It's true. But yeah, as I sat down, I was like, this is a bad idea. What have I done? But then, they got around to this other woman and she, it was quite funny when you realise you're in pregnant land. Because she was like, I'm X weeks. I've had quite a lot of pain. Like, what's it called?
Round ligament pain.
And my back's been really sore. And then she was like, but mostly when I've been wearing high heels. And the yoga teacher was like, maybe that's your body saying that it's time to put the heels away. And this woman was like, I don't want to be fat and short. I was just like, oh my god,
the trials and tribulations.
I know. Oh, you poor thing. Where's all my friends that are just fucking grateful for this to happen to them? Like, oh god, you just don't know yourself. So that she's my like enemy in the class now, obviously. And then came around to me and I was like, am I gonna say it? And I was like, fuck it, I am. And I was like, haven't done much exercise because I had quite a lot of bleeding at the beginning and it's an IVF pregnancy.
Yes.
So I've been anxious and, I've just decided maybe it's time to start moving a bit more and I'm kind of feeling more confident. And I just kind of said it because I was like, there may be someone else in the room that's IVF who doesn't want to say it. And at least I'll put myself out there and maybe that'll be good for them. I don't know. It was kind of, I don't know, I felt quite good after I just said it.
Yeah.
I was like, there you go, they all shut up, leave me alone.
Yeah, that's what we did, that's what I did during NCT.
Yeah, I remember.
Like, hi, I'm Emma, this is IVF.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm special. And it was, the yoga itself was nice. It's very easy.
Cool.
For me at this point, I guess. It'll get harder when you get a bump. But but it was good, it was just nice to be, again, just nice to be moving. And then I had a really nice day. I went for a pedicure.
Oh, chill.
Which was lush.
Yeah.
Went for dinner with my friends.
Oh.
Had a small glass of wine.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was just a really lovely day, actually.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah, feeling quite good.
What colour are your toes?
They are like a neon coral.
Oh, that's almost the colour that you bought me, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, it's obviously the colour I like.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Love it.
Yeah, so I'm in a great mood, actually. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, can't complain.
Cool.
I'm 35, though.
Mate.
Fuck.
That makes you like an old pregnancy, right?
It does, but I looked it up and you have to be, it's when you get pregnant after 35.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah, I was like, I looked it up on Saturday, I was like, does this make me geriatric? but strictly speaking, no, it doesn't.
That's like when my sister bought herself a 16 to 25 rail card on her 25th birthday, but it was like a 5-year one. She had it until she was 30.
Wishful thinking. Yeah, I used to have a thing about the geriatric pregnancy, obviously, because like nobody, I don't think anyone sets out wanting to have that terminology because it's so offensive.
Yeah.
But like as time went on, I was kind of like, and it was becoming more and more likely that that would be the case. I was just like, it doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't matter.
Mm-mm.
Like so many women, like even women I know just get pregnant actually over 35. My mum had a baby over 35.
Exactly.
My stepmom had babies over 35. It doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, it's cool.
And it's more common these days. So I just think they need to just change that term, man.
Yeah, they really do.
Like it's just so offensive. But I'm like Indiana Jones, like I've snuck in under the door just as it's closing.
Grabbed your hat.
Like, yeah. So that's that really
cool.
Yeah.
And we're done.
That's it, guys.
That is it for our third, our trinultimate.
The ultimate. That's not the word.
I think we made up two good words just there. Podcast. Next week, we are going to be talking to our friend Ali.
Yes.
And she's going to be talking about secondary infertility, but also TFMR, termination for medical reasons.
Yes.
She's had a really hard time.
She has.
And she has shared it with us.
And she is good fun and a great person.
Yeah. And she got us presents.
She did.
We should say every time someone brings us presents, just to encourage more presents.
Yeah, I think we do.
But we had a really nice, nice chat. A challenging yet satisfying chat.
Yes.
So we'll see you for that next week.
Yeah, enjoy and have a good week. And yeah. See you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.